We hear it all the time, right? Democracy is under threat. But what if the real challenge isn't defending democracy as we know it? What if it's redesigning it, you know, for the future? That's what we're going to be looking at today with this paper by Philippe Schmitter, The Future of Real Existing Democracy.
You know, what's fascinating to me about this paper is this paradox that Schmitter points out. Just as democracy is spreading globally, like it's really becoming the dominant form of government around the world.
Right.
Those of us in established democracies are feeling disillusioned. It's almost like democracy is winning everywhere, but losing where it's been around the longest.
Yeah, it's kind of head scratcher. So to unpack this, we need to start with how Schmitter defines these real democracies.
Yeah.
He uses this term, real existing democracies. It's a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, he doesn't sugarcoat it. I mean, he's looking at, you know, not the ideals, but the messy systems that call themselves democratic.
Right.
Are recognized as such by others and meet certain procedural criteria.
It's like the nuts and bolts, not the aspiration.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so it's about how democracy actually functions, warts and all. But then he throws in this other term, polyarchy.
Right.
And that's where I started getting lost.
Yeah, that's Robert Dahl's term.
Okay.
Another, you know, big name in political science. Basically, it means a system with genuine competition and citizen participation. What we might consider a real democracy. And Schmitter is building on Dahl's work to trace how these real democracies evolve.
Okay.
You know, over time.
So less about the textbook definition, more about what's happening on the ground.
Exactly.
And that evolution is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because Schmitter argues that, you know, these real democracies, despite their flaws, are still the best game in town.
Yeah.
He even quotes Churchill.
Yeah.
Saying they're the governments that are more of by and for the people than any other alternative that we've been able to come up with.
That's a key point, I think. He's not saying that real democracies are perfect.
Right.
But they're the least bad option that we've been able to come up with so far. But that doesn't mean they're not in need of serious reform.
Okay, I'm starting to see the tension here. Best system we've got, but still deeply flawed.
Right.
And this is where the paradox that you mentioned comes in.
Exactly.
Back in the 1960s, there were only like 26 of these real democracies.
Yeah.
Which Schmitter, Falling Dahl calls full polyarchies.
Yeah.
Mostly Western nations.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty exclusive club back then.
Yeah.
But fast forward to today,
and
that number has more than tripled.
Wow.
We're seeing these democracies in places that, you know, wouldn't have seemed possible a few decades ago. Albania, Mongolia, even Mali.
Yeah, that's remarkable progress.
Yeah.
But it makes this crisis of faith, you know, even more puzzling.
Yeah.
What explains this disconnect between democracy spread and people's dissatisfaction?
Well, Schmitter's theory is that the collapse of communism removed what he calls the negative comparison. You know, during the Cold War, real democracies could always point to the failings of communist regimes and say, hey, at least we're not that.
I guess when your only competition is this authoritarian system, your flaws seem less glaring.
Exactly.
So once that alternative vanished, the bar was raised.
Right.
People started expecting more.
Precisely. Real democracies can't just be better than some oppressive regime.
Right.
They have to actually deliver the goods.
Deliver the
good. Good governance, responsive representation, a sense that citizens have a real voice.
Okay, so that's the backdrop, right? Democracies more widespread than ever.
Yeah.
But also facing this legitimacy crisis. But how did we even get to this point? How did these real democracies, with all their complexities, how did they evolve in the first place? And Schmitter dives into this.
He does.
Drawing on Dahl's idea of revolutions
and
how democracy functions.
Yeah, and these revolutions are more about gradual shifts than, you know, storming the Bastille. The first one is about size. Early democracies were limited to small city-states because direct participation was considered essential.
Right.
But the U.S. Constitution changed the game.
Right. The American example, instead of everyone voting on everything, they introduce representation and federalism, delegating power to elected officials and dividing it between different levels of government.
And that's crucial because it allowed democracy to function over vast territories, a radical shift from the city-state model.
Yeah.
It meant democracy could scale up.
Right.
But it also created a distance between citizens and their representatives, which Schmitter argues is a key problem today.
So that leads to the second revolution,
right,
which Dahl says is about scale.
Yeah.
This is where democracy expands beyond this tiny elite to include more and more people.
Exactly. Early democracies were incredibly exclusive, often limiting voting to a small group of wealthy men.
Right.
But over time, movements for suffrage, you know, based on gender, race, property ownership, pushed for a more inclusive system.
Right.
And eventually these movements succeeded in expanding the franchise to include most adults.
Right, but that raises the question of what these newly enfranchised citizens could actually influence, which brings us to Dahl's third revolution.
Yes, the revolution of scope. Initially, democracies focused on a narrow set of functions, primarily maintaining order and defense. But as societies became more complex, people demanded more from their governments.
Mm-hmm.
Regulation of the economy, social welfare programs, you name it.
So democracy went from like a night watchman state
right.
to something much more expansive.
Exactly.
With its fingers in all sorts of pies.
Exactly. And here's a point that Dahl makes about all three of these revolutions. They weren't part of some grand plan.
Okay.
They were adaptations,
yeah.
responses to pressures and problems that emerged over time.
Yeah.
You know, politicians weren't plotting to radically reshape democracy. They were reacting to the demands of their citizens and the changing circumstances.
So these weren't revolutions in the sense of deliberate overthrows, but more like evolutionary leaps.
Yeah.
Driven by necessity and the changing needs of society.
Exactly.
But Schmitter argues that these revolutions didn't stop with Dahl's three.
Right.
He believes that at least two more have been unfolding in the background.
Yeah.
Quietly reshaping how our democracies function.
He calls these the post-Dahlian revolutions.
Okay.
And they're crucial to understanding why democracy is in such a strange state today. We've got democracy spreading like wildfire.
Yeah.
But the systems themselves seem to be struggling to keep up with the demands of the 21st century.
All right, this is where it gets really interesting and a little unsettling.
Right.
Tell me more about these post-Dahlian revolutions, these hidden forces reshaping the democratic landscape.
So the first one has to do with the rise of organizations.
Okay.
Think about it. It's no longer individuals
right.
who primarily engage with the political system,
yeah.
but organized groups,
mm-hmm.
unions, business lobbies, advocacy organizations. They've become the real power players.
So it's less about individual citizens having their voices heard
Yay.
And more about these large, powerful groups battling it out.
In many ways, yes.
In the political arena.
These organizations have their own agendas,
right.
resources, and expertise, which gives them a huge advantage over individuals who are trying to navigate the, you know, complexities of politics. And Schmitter argues that this shift toward organizations has fundamentally changed how democracies work.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at how much influence lobbyists have.
Exactly.
It could feel like they have more sway over politicians than voters do.
Yeah.
But what about the second post-Dahlian revolution? What's that all about?
Well, it's about the professionalization of politics itself.
Okay.
You know, politics used to be seen as a civic duty,
huh?
something people did out of a sense of service,
right.
not as a career. Remember Cincinnatus, the Roman citizen farmer who was called upon to lead during a crisis
yeah.
and then went back to his plow after saving the Republic?
Yeah, we've come a long way from Cincinnatus to, well, career politicians.
Right.
I can see how the demands on government growing would make the role more complex,
yeah.
needing more dedicated people.
Sure.
But that shift has consequences, right?
Absolutely. It's led to skyrocketing campaign costs, making it harder for ordinary citizens to run for office.
Right.
It's created a disconnect between politicians and the people they represent as politicians, focus more on their careers and less on the concerns of their constituents. I bet you have stories about feeling unheard by your representative.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yay.
But I see your point.
Mm-hmm.
These post-Dahlian revolutions, organizations taking center stage and politics becoming a career, have already shaken things up.
They have.
But Schmitter doesn't stop there, does he? He thinks there are even more revolutions happening right now.
He does.
Reshaping democracy in even more dramatic ways.
And these are the ones that should really be keeping us up at night.
Okay.
These revolutions are shaping the present, and Schmitter argues that they demand serious attention.
Right.
If we want have any hope of understanding,
yep.
let alone shaping the future of democracy.
Okay, this is getting a bit unsettling.
It is a little bit, yeah.
Lay it on me. What are these really current revolutions
mm-hmm.
that Schmitter warns us about, and why should we be paying attention?
So the first one is the rise of what he calls guardianship. This is where real democracies are increasingly ceding power to unelected expert bodies. Think central banks, regulatory agencies, international organizations.
So unelected bureaucrats are calling the shots
right.
on some of the most important issues. But isn't there a danger in letting unelected experts
Huge danger.
make crucial decisions? Where's the accountability to the people?
That's exactly the concern that Schmitter raises.
Right.
The argument is that these issues are too complex or too sensitive
okay.
for the messy world of politics.
All right.
Take central banks. The idea is that they need to be independent from political pressure to make sound decisions about monetary policy.
So it's about efficiency and expertise.
Right.
Taking politics out of the equation.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like a slippery slope towards technocracy.
Right.
Where the people have less and less say.
That's the dilemma.
Yeah.
And it's not just about central banks. Think about all the regulatory agencies that have a huge impact on our lives. Environmental protection, food safety, financial markets.
Right.
Who's holding them accountable?
Yeah, this is making me think about all the times I felt frustrated
yeah.
trying to understand who's responsible for what in the government. It can feel like a maze.
That actually leads right into the second revolution
okay.
that Schmitter highlights. Something particularly relevant in Europe, the rise of multi-level governance.
Yep.
Power is becoming increasingly dispersed across different levels, local, regional, national, and even supranational, as with the European Union.
So instead of a clear chain of command,
right.
it's like this tangled web mm-hmm. of overlapping jurisdiction
yeah.
and decision-making bodies. That's a recipe for confusion, isn't it?
It can be.
Yeah.
And while there can be benefits to bringing decision-making closer to the people, this diffusion of power makes accountability really tricky.
Right.
It becomes harder to figure out who's responsible for what, and citizens can feel lost in a maze of institutions.
It's like that saying, a camel is a horse designed by a committee.
Right.
Except in this case, it's democracy designed by a bunch of overlapping committees.
Exactly.
So Schmitter has laid out a pretty sobering picture of the challenges facing democracy today.
Right.
These revolutions, two from the past and two happening right now,
right.
have radically reshaped democratic governance, often in ways that we haven't fully grasped. So what does he propose we do out about all of this?
Right.
Does he offer any solutions to these complex problems?
He does, and he doesn't mince words. Schmitter argues that tinkering around the edges won't cut it. He believes we need a fundamental redesign of our democratic systems to address the challenges of the 21st century.
Redesign. That sounds like a tall order. I mean, where do you even begin?
It's a huge challenge, but Schmitter is convinced it's necessary if we want to revitalize democracy and restore its legitimacy.
Okay.
He has a rather provocative quote where he says, "What is needed is not more of the same democracy, but a different type of democracy."
Okay. Color me intrigued. What kind of different democracy does he have in mind?
Well, Schmitter, along with a group of scholars and politicians, came up with 28 specific proposals for reforming democratic systems, some quite radical.
28. We might need a whole separate deep dive just to get through those.
We might. But for now, I think it's important to emphasize that Schmitter isn't just offering abstract theories.
Yeah.
He's trying to find practical solutions to the very real problems we're seeing in democracies today.
That's what makes this so compelling, right?
Right.
We're not just talking about some academic exercise.
Yeah.
We're talking about the future of our own societies.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, the idea of fundamentally redesigning democracy is a bit daunting.
Yeah.
Where do we even begin?
Well, Schmitter argues we need to start by restoring trust in politicians and representative institutions. He also highlights the issue of non-citizen residents and their lack of political voice. These are just two starting points, but they get at the heart of some of the most pressing challenges facing democracies today.
Okay, so it's about tackling the root causes of this crisis of faith in democracy.
Exactly.
But let's get to the good stuff. Can you give us a taste of some of these radical proposals?
Absolutely. Some focus on addressing declining trust in politicians.
Okay.
So imagine using lotteries alongside elections to select representatives or setting up democracy kiosks for easy electronic voting and interaction with government agencies. Others aim to address the political status of non-citizen residents.
Okay.
Perhaps granting them voting rights. There are also ideas for empowering citizens through participatory budgeting and randomly selected citizen assemblies to review legislation.
Wow, those are some outside-the-box ideas.
They are.
But I guess that's what redesign means.
This is.
Right. It's not about tweaks, but about rethinking the whole system.
Exactly. The point isn't necessarily to endorse any specific proposal, but to show the range of ideas being explored and to spark a conversation about reimagining democracy for the 21st century.
Well, I'm definitely feeling that spark.
Good.
This is making me think about my own role as a citizen.
Yeah.
If democracy is in constant flux,
right.
if it needs to be redesigned,
yeah.
what can I do to be a part of that process?
That's a fantastic question. And I think Schmitter would say that asking that question is the first step. We need to move beyond simply complaining about how broken things are and start engaging in a more constructive way.
Okay, I'm ready to roll up my sleeves.
Yeah.
But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's delve into some of these specific proposals and see what they really entail.
Let's do it. We've got lotteries, kiosks, voting rights for non-citizens, citizen assemblies. It's a whole buffet of democratic reform.
I'm ready to dig in.
Hmm?
Okay, let's unpack some of these radical proposals that Schmitter's laid out, starting with this whole lottery for a political office thing. It sounds like something out of ancient Athens.
Yeah.
Not a modern democracy.
It might seem like a throwback, but the idea is to address those very modern problems we talked about. Career politicians and declining trust in elected officials.
I can see how people would be drawn to that. I mean, who hasn't felt frustrated with the same old faces in politics year after year? But how would it actually work? Would we just randomly select names out of a hat and say, "Congrats, you're in Congress now"?
Not quite that simple. There are different models for how this could be implemented. One idea is to use lotteries to select a certain percentage of representatives alongside those elected through traditional means.
So a hybrid system.
Right.
Some elected, some randomly selected.
Exactly.
I could see that potentially shaking things up.
Exactly. And another approach is to use lotteries to form citizen assemblies with specific powers, like reviewing legislation or proposing new policies.
Okay, so not about replacing elections entirely, but about introducing an element of chance to break up the power of political parties and give ordinary citizens a more direct role in government.
Precisely. The idea is to make the system less about who you know and how much money you have, and more about representing a true cross-section of society.
I get the appeal, especially for people who feel like this system is rigged against them. But wouldn't there be concerns about competence? I mean, what if you end up with people who have no clue about governing?
That's a valid concern, and proponents of lotteries have to address it head on. One way to mitigate that risk is through extensive training and support for those selected. Another idea is to use lotteries for roles where specialized knowledge might not be as crucial.
Okay.
Like those citizen assemblies focused on broad policy issues.
Okay, so not just throwing anyone into parliament, but strategically using lotteries to bring in fresh perspectives and address some of the systemic problems we've been talking about.
Exactly. And it's just one idea among many. Remember, Schmitter and his colleagues offer a whole smorgasbord of reforms aimed at different aspects of democratic dysfunction.
Well, let's keep exploring this buffet. What else piqued your interest?
These democracy kiosks that Schmitter proposes are really intriguing. Picture physical locations, maybe in public spaces or community centers, where citizens can easily access government services, vote electronically, and even participate in online deliberations.
So like a one-stop shop for democracy. I kind of love that.
Right. The idea is to make engaging with politics easier and more convenient. Kiosks could offer information about elections, candidates' platforms, key policy issues. Citizens could use them to register to vote, cast their ballots, even participate in online forums or surveys to provide feedback on government policies.
I can see how that would lower the barrier to entry, which is huge. Sometimes it feels like our systems are designed to make it as difficult as possible to get involved.
It's about meeting people where they are, making democracy more accessible in their daily lives.
Right.
With all the technology available today,
yeah,
it could be implemented fairly easily and cost effectively.
Okay, sign me up for a democracy kiosk.
Okay.
Now, this next one is sure to spark debate. Giving voting rights to foreign residents.
It's definitely controversial, but it's a conversation happening in many countries, especially in Europe, where you have large populations of non-citizen residents with deep ties to their communities, but no political voice.
I can see both sides. It seems unfair to deny people who live and work in a country a say in how it's governed. But some people might argue that voting is a right reserved for citizens, and that granting it to non-citizens would dilute the meaning of citizenship.
Exactly. It's complex, and Schmitter doesn't shy away from that. He acknowledges the concerns, but argues that we need to find ways to incorporate non-citizen residents into the political process, especially those who have been living and contributing to a country for a long time. Denying them a voice can breed alienation and resentment, which ultimately hurts social cohesion.
So it's not just about fairness to individuals, but about the health of the democratic system as a whole.
Right. Schmitter sees it as both a matter of democratic principle and a pragmatic necessity in increasingly diverse societies.
That makes sense. Okay, so we've got these really thought-provoking proposals. Lotteries, kiosks, voting rights for non-citizens. They all challenge the status quo and push us to think differently about how democracy can function. But I'm curious about the specific problems Schmitter is trying to solve with these reforms. Earlier, we talked about those four revolutions reshaping democracy both historically and in our current moment. Which of those revolutions are these reforms specifically designed to address?
Great question. The reforms we've been discussing mainly target the revolutions related to the professionalization of politics, the rise of organizations, and guardianship, that ceding of power to unelected bodies. They're all about rebalancing power, giving citizens more control, and pushing back against decision-making by unelected experts.
Okay, let's break that down.
Yeah.
How would using lotteries help address the professionalization of politics?
Remember how we talked about politics becoming a career path where politicians get entrenched and disconnected from their constituents? Lotteries could disrupt that dynamic. By introducing randomness, you create opportunities for people who might not have the connections or resources to run for office through traditional means. It could diversify representation, reduce the influence of money in politics, and make it harder for politicians to cling to power.
It's like shaking up the ant farm, seeing what new patterns emerge. And how do these reforms address the rise of organizations?
Reforms focused on citizen participation, like those democracy kiosks and participatory budgeting, aim to empower individuals and give them more direct control. By making information easily accessible, allowing electronic voting, and giving citizens a say in how public funds are spent, these reforms can help counter the influence of those big, powerful organizations and make the system more responsive to the needs of ordinary people.
So it's about shifting the balance of power back towards individuals and away from those well-funded groups that often dominate the political landscape.
Exactly. And finally, those reforms aimed at increasing citizen participation and direct democracy, things like citizen assemblies and referendums, are designed to counter the trend of guardianship. By giving citizens more opportunities to have a direct say in policy decisions, these reforms can help ensure that ultimate control remains in the hands of the people, not unelected bureaucrats.
It's about reclaiming democratic control and making sure that important decisions aren't being made behind closed doors by unelected officials.
Precisely. These reforms are all about reinvigorating democracy, making it more responsive to citizens' needs, and ensuring that power remains in the hands of the people.
These are some seriously bold ideas, and I'm sure they'll spark a lot of debate. But it's clear that Schmitter is challenging us to think deeply about the state of democracy and to envision new possibilities for how it can function in the 21st century. He's asking tough questions and proposing radical solutions, but he's also offering a path forward,
yeah,
a set of tools and ideas that we can use to build a more vibrant and resilient democracy.
I completely agree. He's not just pointing out problems. He's inviting us to be part of the solution. And that's an invitation we should all take seriously.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a challenge. Think about the reforms we've discussed. Mm. The lotteries, the democracy kiosks, the voting rights for foreign residents, the citizen assemblies. Which ones resonate with you? Which ones do you think have the potential to make a real difference in your community?
And even more importantly, what other ideas do you have for reforming democracy? What changes would you like to see in the way your government works? Schmitter's work shows us that democracy is not a static system, but a living, evolving one. It's up to all of us to shape its future.
It's a powerful thought to carry with us as we move into the final part of our deep dive. We'll be exploring some even more radical proposals from Schmitter and his colleagues, ideas that truly challenge our assumptions about how democracy can work.
Stay tuned. Welcome back to our deep dive into the future of democracy.
It's been quite a journey so far. It has. We've explored these revolutions reshaping democracy from its early days to this kind of strange place we find ourselves in now.
Right.
And we've dug into some pretty radical reform proposals.
Yeah. Lotteries, kiosks, voting rights for non-citizens.
We've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, we have. But Schmitter and his colleagues don't stop there.
Right.
They've got even more ideas.
Okay.
Ones that really challenge our assumptions about how democracy can and should work.
Okay. Now, I'm really intrigued. Give me an example. What kind of fundamental rethinking are we talking about?
One that really pushes the boundaries is this concept of smart voting. Imagine a system where technology is used not just to cast a ballot,
right,
but to make the whole process more informed and deliberative.
So it's not just about checking a box, but about having access to information and actually engaging in a more thoughtful decision-making process.
Exactly. Right now, most of us vote based on limited information, sound bites from the news, campaign slogans, maybe a quick glance at a candidate's website. But what if you had a comprehensive platform that provided in-depth information on each candidate? their positions, voting record, funding sources. You could easily compare their stances on key issues.
Right.
And even engage in online discussions with other voters to weigh the pros and cons.
That sounds amazing, like having a personal political advisor in your pocket. But wouldn't something like that be incredibly complex and expensive to set up?
It would definitely require investment
in
technology and infrastructure, but the potential payoff is huge.
Yeah.
A more informed electorate could lead to better decisions, more accountability from elected officials, and a stronger sense of civic engagement.
Okay. I'm starting to see how this smart voting idea could really shake things up. What other radical proposals did Schmitter and his team cook up?
This one is sure to be controversial. Discretionary voting. It's a system where your vote's weight depends on your knowledge of the issues or candidates.
Wait, so some people's votes would count more than others? That doesn't sound very democratic.
I know it seems counterintuitive, but the idea is to address the problem of uninformed voting. Proponents argue that if you haven't taken the time to understand the issues or the candidates, your vote shouldn't carry the same weight as someone who is well-informed.
So it's like saying if you want your voice to really be heard, you need to do your homework and become an engaged citizen.
Exactly. It's a provocative idea.
Yeah.
But it raises some important questions about representation and the responsibility of citizens to participate in a meaningful way.
It definitely challenges our assumptions about one person, one vote.
Speaking of challenging assumptions, what about this idea of citizen assemblies selected by lottery to review legislation?
Yeah, this one builds on the concept of sortition, which we discussed earlier with the lottery idea for representatives.
Right.
Here, you create randomly selected citizen assemblies with the power to review and potentially veto legislation passed by elected officials.
So it's like a check on the power of traditional legislatures.
Yeah, ensuring that laws align with the will of the people.
Exactly. These assemblies would be made up of everyday people from all walks of life,
right,
representing a true cross-section of society. They'd be given the time and resources to study the legislation, hear from experts, and deliberate before making a decision.
It sounds like a way to inject a dose of direct democracy into the system and ensure that laws actually reflect the values and priorities of the people they're supposed to serve.
It certainly flips the script on the idea that only elected officials have the authority to make laws. It puts power directly in the hands of the people.
Wow. We've covered some seriously mind-bending ideas in this deep dive. Lotteries for political office, smart voting, citizen assemblies. Schmitter and his colleagues are really pushing us to think outside the box and imagine a future where democracy is more inclusive, more deliberative, and more responsive to the needs of citizens.
What I find most inspiring is that they're not just presenting abstract theories, they're offering concrete proposals, things that could actually be put into practice. They're showing us that a different kind of democracy is possible, one that is truly by and for the people.
It's been an incredible journey exploring these ideas with you.
The pleasure was all mine.
So as we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with this.
Yeah.
Schmitter argues that democracy isn't a destination, but a journey, a constant process of adaptation and reinvention.
And that means the future of democracy isn't set in stone. It's something we create together.
Yeah.
Having these conversations, challenging our assumptions, and imagining new possibilities.
Right.
We can shape a democracy that lives up to its ideals.
That's a powerful message to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the future of democracy.